The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Kia ora koutou. My name is Toby Manhire. It's October the 14th at, what time is it, Anna?
It's nearly midnight. It's 16 minutes to midnight.
Perfect. Perfect. 16 minutes to midnight. Special post-election debrief live stream for our pleasure and maybe possibly even yours. Anna Rafferty Connell, hello, how are you? Welcome.
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Madeline Chapman. Kia ora to you.
Hello.
We made it through, nearly, and just before we all turn into pumpkins, we're going to give you a quick rundown on what has happened, what has played out tonight on election night. I tell you, what we know is this. We know that Christopher Luxon will be the next Prime Minister. We saw him speak this evening to a packed Shed 10 on the waterfront in Auckland, and it was quite a contrast with last election, when it was a much more modest and sombre affair. We also know that National's done better than they were looking in the polls, although not quite as healthy a lead as they had partway through the night. We'll get into that in a second. We know that Labor has plunged. They've gone from 50.01% in the 2000 red wave, the COVID election, in which they achieved something that always looked as though it would be anomalous, but there is no escaping the steepness of that fall to, as of 92.6% of results counted, they're on 26.6%. What else? Hipkins talked about there being curveballs in his speech to at the Hutt Valley, where they held the Labor event this evening. He talked about having to face curveballs. He talked about how when the tide comes in, then it goes out too, just as dramatically. Certainly that's happened. Mad, you watched the speeches on the television in the spin-off office.
Mm-hmm.
The whole spin-off office is decked out in orange in honour of the Dutch cricket team, who are currently playing in the Cricket World Cup, and we're all huge fans. Unfortunately, they lost to the Black Caps the other night, but come on the Dutch. Mad, what did you make of the speeches?
Chris Hipkins, I quite liked Chris Hipkins' speech. It was, I feel like sometimes those concession speeches, they try to make it like a victory speech, except that, you know, like, we won, but also we lost. There's obviously no escaping the fact that they lost quite heavily tonight, and he didn't seem to try and hide that except for pointing a bit to some of Labor's successes in government. I think him getting tearful was a very human and not surprising, but quite a nice touch that, especially since he kind of ended his campaign so aggressive and quite, you know, quote unquote angry, it was quite, it was quite heartening to see him.
Would you have liked to see him cry in the third debate? Is that what you
I mean, look, I love to see anyone cry. I love to cry myself. So I think it was, it felt like a very genuine speech and not trying to kind of strategize for the next 3 years or anything like that. It was just very much of the moment. And then a lovely shout out to Tony.
Tony.
Spelling unknown.
I think it's T-O-N-I.
I think it's T-O-N-I. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there'll be many, many more Google searches of that.
Big fan of the Dutch cricket team. He talked about us getting back up again and all that sort of stuff, and then afterwards in interviews wouldn't be drawn on whether or not he'd be staying, and suggested that he genuinely did not have a plan B, as he'd said during the campaign, and that we'd wait and find out whether or not he will remain as Labor leader. What about Luxon?
I thought Luxon spoke, he did kind of like in the debates, it felt like he was speaking almost as a person who was re-elected. He felt very kind of confident. I guess that's the CEO.
Well, he looked prime ministerial, I thought.
Yeah, there's a CEO in him. Yeah. He spoke well, did hate the use of the phrase do life with you, which is what he said to his wife. Otherwise, pretty good. Those are the things that really stood out to me, having listened to a bunch of political speeches throughout the night. But no, he seemed extremely comfortable. I think he was not surprised, obviously, but also very confident and very much had the room in a way that wasn't, you know, he thanked Chris Hipkins and he spoke fairly graciously and didn't suggest too much with Winston Peters. And then at one point the crowd was chanting and it honestly sounded like they were saying, preen up. Don't know what they were actually saying, but it felt appropriate for Winston Peters.
They did it back on track, but then there was later and it was a
freedom, peanut.
These are
all of them were
more mysteries to be uncovered as we progress. Anything else in the speeches from either of you, Anna, tonight, or the other speeches that you watched on the telly?
I mean, I think, you know, I think Hipkins was interesting because he has been, and I think this is his right and it's fair, but he's been really reticent about his personal life over the course of the campaign. His kids have not featured. He has not really ever spoken about it. And it's just been such a marked contrast from Ardern, right, who that was all out there. And then tonight he kind of gave us, the ebb and flow of Chris Hipkins in terms of that kind of real mongrel aggression at the debate and then this kind of other guy that was up there tonight. I feel like it's been quite hard to get a handle on who he actually is, which I know is something people also said about Christopher Luxon, but I do feel like we got the measure of Christopher Luxon over the course of the campaign.
Yeah. Let's recap on those numbers before we talk about what they might mean. We're looking right now at the numbers from 92.6% of results counted. You might be slightly ahead of me there.
95.1.
Oh, well. Anna's got, it's like you've got some,
breaking
how can
news.
You do that? That computer's not even plugged in.
I
what kind of voodoo is this?
I am the machine.
I printed it out.
You've got a bit of paper. I've got it live.
All right, well, you tell us then what it is.
95.1% of the vote counted. So Nationalists sitting on 39.2, which would give them 50 seats. Mm-hmm. ACTA on 9.1, which would give them 11. So combined, you've got a 61.
61.
Mm.
Now, that is quite a narrow majority,
squeaky,
isn't it?
Yep.
And I don't know what we've had some stuff which we'll talk about in a moment with, because Te Pāti Māori are overperforming in electorates vis-a-vis their party vote, that could create an overhang. At one point in the night, as the results were rolling in, we would have had a parliament of 124. That was because they were, at one point, I think Te Pāti Māori were winning 6 or possibly even 7 of the Māori seats. So at the moment, do you know what that is? At the moment, I think it's 121 seat parliament. So it would be an overhang of 1.
Yep.
And that would be National and ACT having 61 of 121, which is the narrowest possible majority. However, when the by-election is held on November the 25th in Port Waikato, which was occasioned by the ACT candidate sadly dying during the course of advance voting had opened, which means there will be a by-election, which almost certainly Andrew Bailey will win. That would mean that National and ACT would have 62 seats out of 122. We also await special votes. And that in the last two elections has amounted to 17% of the overall vote, and things can move. Usually the Greens pick up another seat. Last time, Te Pāti Māori just edged up enough to get a second seat. There are some things that can move around. And so the question really, Anna, is do you pick up the phone to Winston Peters anyway? We've already heard tonight that Christopher Luxon has talked to David Seymour, and we knew that that would happen. We knew that would happen.
And
do you call up Winston anyway? Do you call the old the old rotary phone in the Duke of Marlborough Hotel. Get him on there. Hello, this is the Duke of Marlborough Hotel. And then you ask for Mr. Peters, yeah. The Right Honourable Mr. Peters.
Ring, ring. Hmm. Yeah, I think you do. I mean, Peters himself in the speech said he sort of indicated he'd be happy to help. it's really tight. It's really close. And I think it's, you know, New Zealand First categorically do not and have been very clear about this, want to return Labour to government in any way, shape or form. So I think you do give him a call. It's very tight. It's very close. Things might slip around. I mean, you know, looking at the Māori seats, for example, the last time I had a look, I mean, in Te Tai Tokorau, Calvin Davis is only 138 votes ahead of the Te Pāti Māori candidate. Mm. So Te Pāti Māori might pick up another electorate seat, and they have already got four. So, yeah, I don't think it's a sealed deal in terms of it just being a National Act kind of governing scenario. I think you might want to pop Winston Peters in your top pocket there.
It will be interesting to see where it plays out in some sense, I think, because David Seymour is so, I would have thought, determined that a coalition could be held together without New Zealand First taking part. He might therefore be a bit more willing to offer sort of levels of guarantees or compromises he otherwise wouldn't.
Well, you mean he'll like give up something in order to keep Winston out?
He's just been talking a lot during the course of a campaign in which it was looking as though ACT would be a coalition partner comprising a quarter of the overall coalition MPs and therefore a quarter of cabinet. And then the ghost of Winston Peters floated in through the rafters and absorbed much of the last few weeks of the campaign. And having been confronted with that reality, where before Seymour was so determined, I think he will still be determined to push on making sure he gets the things he wants, perhaps there might be some level of, because always the cord you can pull is that you can say, well, the government won't hold any longer. I think in this circumstance, maybe he'll be a little bit steeled to do that. I don't know.
Did he come out, was it last night, and said, we would sacrifice positions at the cabinet table for policy?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I think that was imagining a New Zealand First scenario, though. I think with these numbers, it's hard to imagine anything other than a National ACT coalition. Actual formal coalition with seats around the cabinet table. The interesting thing about it is I talked to someone at the ACT. I popped into the Green ACT and National Party.
The joint party that they all had.
They were all very hopefully within 3 minutes walk of each other. The ACT and the Green events were literally adjacent, so that Shanti and Charlotte, who were there for us, were able to wave at one another on the balcony outside. Anyway, I spoke to someone who's quite high up on the ACT list and asked that person whether or not they thought they might be in cabinet. And they said, well, actually on these numbers, maybe not, because if you look at 50 to 11, that's a ratio of 5 to 1, versus at one point it was looking like a ratio of 3 to 1, which would have given you would, and that's roughly the basis that you would go into a cabinet on. So rather than having 15 National to 5 ACT, this could be more like 16 or 17 National and the remainder ACT. Anyway, that's probably getting a bit ahead of ourselves. We will need to, I think they'll almost certainly get underway with doing the coalition. Maybe they offer Winston Peters, not that he's interested in baubles, never has been, to be clear, maybe he does get some kind of role to allow him to have his last term or his
space
last
minister.
Well, second to third to
the minister
to space. Exactly.
He's probably not getting treasurer, though, is he? That sort of thing that he's talked about wanting.
He's not getting treasurer. No, not unless they really need it. But then again, I mean, if they need it, even if they only need one vote to put the government together, that's enough that you get a whole lot of leverage. So, yeah, there's still some water to go under the bridge.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
What else? Well, we've been watching all the numbers flow in. Mad, what are the seats, leaving to one side the Māori electorates, which we'll come to in a second, what are some of the seats that have kind of been edge-of-the-seat seats, the ones that have shot up and surprised?
Yeah, so there were a few, obviously, in both of our neighbourhoods. Mount Albert and Mount Roskill were the two that kind of were not picked to be close seats at all. We certainly did not have them in our hot seat, close seat
Melissa
list.
Lee was remarkably leading Mount Albert, a seat won by Jacinda Ardern by 20,000 in 2020. She was Melanie White, who had a rather miserable time in Auckland Central at the last election when Chloe Swarbrick beat her, was for some time being beaten by Melissa Lee.
For a lot of time.
And that's
beaten by Melissa Lee.
What's the latest?
At the last count, she's up by 89.
She's ahead by 89.
Helen White, she got a bit of a lead going for a couple hundred, and then now it's back with 93.8% of the vote.
So that one is going 89. To the wires.
So it's Ricardo Menendez-March, who came in and as a Green candidate, no one expected him to win, but he has sort of successfully split that left vote quite a lot.
And was running an electorate campaign, which they don't normally do. And he's going to be almost as popular with Helen White as Chloe Swarbrick was
after beating her in Auckland Central. So I think that's kind of, I do think, it is close, but obviously with, the specials, I think Helen White will hold on to it. What I hope is that it basically kind of gives enough of a scare to sort of, I don't know, spark some inventiveness in Helen White in terms of now having an electorate seat. I think that would be quite, it would be quite embarrassing. Gina Lynch said early on when Melissa Lee was leading that Helen White should be ashamed of herself if she loses Auckland Central in 2020 and then Mount Albert in 2023. And that was obviously very strong words from Gina, but it would be extremely embarrassing to take one of the strongest Labour holds. Obviously, it was Jacinda's seat, but one of the strongest Labour seats in the country and lose it.
And then down the road, Michael Wood.
Down the road, Michael Wood.
Has lost.
He has lost to Carlos Trung from National and quite significantly, 1,500. He's down by 1,500 votes. So he's out. He is out of Parliament.
Someone who, despite having had a difficult year, to put it mildly, having over his shareholdings, which he failed to divest himself of, though he'd said he would, but still someone who was being talked about as a potential leader of the Labour Party, whether veneer or...
When you interviewed him on the Megapod, there were comments of Michael Wood, next Labour Prime Minister, they weren't just... tuck that on anyone who's been interviewed. It was a genuine contender for leader and potential.
He was. When Jacinda Ardern stood down, he was one of the few alternatives that were being talked about alongside Hipkins. So it's a massive result. I was, as I arrived at the National Party function at Shed 10 earlier, there was a chant that went up going, Carlos, Carlos, Carlos. And there was a crowd of about 20 people surrounding Carlos Chung, the national candidate for Mount Roskill, who... I mean, he was on nobody's card, so I was sort of had to pinch myself, really. Quite an extraordinary scene.
So those two, I mean, Michael Wood being out is a huge shock. I think in the same category but potentially hanging on is Phil Twyford in Te Aratu. He is down by 170 with 94% of the vote counted.
Wow. Yeah.
And he will... maybe hang on the list, but as well could potentially be out if he loses that. And Rongotai, Fleur Fitzsimons, will be out if she loses to Julianne Gentle, which it is looking.
Yeah. She was never pretty, in. She was never in. Yeah. But she yeah, that would be amazing if the Greens were to get a third. Sorry, which I'm getting ahead of you here, because Wellington Central.
Yeah. Wellington Central was a runaway for Tamworth Paul. Has it all come in yet?
Yeah, well, pretty much. She's 3,000 votes ahead.
So Ibrahim Omar is also out.
Omar is out.
And then in terms of the actual close edge of your seat, Nelson, 100% of the votes counted, margin of 54.
Oh, Nelson.
To Blair Cameron, who leads Labour's Rachel Boyack. That is obviously that will... could flip back with special votes, but that is about as close as you can possibly get with 100% of the vote counted. So these are all seats. I mean, Rangitai was expected to be potentially quite close, but the rest of them were not even expected to be close at all. And suddenly they are looking either like pretty comfortable losses or a very, very narrow win for Labour. So I don't know. It would definitely be quite shocking. I think that changes. I was saying we had a list of, you have draft lists of potential MPs who might be in or MPs who might be out, and we had to do some pretty heavy revising of our Labour list of potential MPs out because some of these names we didn't think would factor in at all.
Yeah. Labour would bring in sort of 17-odd list seats, wouldn't they, at this rate, which is sort of more than would be expected if they'd done better, which is sort of seems around the wrong way, but that's the nature of it.
Because they've lost so many
electorates. Kieran McInaughey was a potential borderline, but he's pretty safe now.
He'll come back now on the list, having lost the... and so he's someone who has been talked about as potential leader if Chris Hipkins is to stand down. There'll be some other people on that list who Labour will be glad to have, in one sense at least, because it might offer them some opportunity for rejuvenation. Any more on your seat list, or should we switch to?
No, that was all. Oh, obviously Tamaki, Brooke Van Velden.
Tamaki.
It wasn't that edge of your seat. She ended up winning quite comfortably, but it certainly going into it felt close. And now, in terms of the seats, I thought it was quite, regardless of your leanings, very exciting in terms of a whole bunch of new faces and, a minor party. Electorate seat wins. It's going to be very interesting.
It's quite good to have, I think, ACT and the Greens getting a foothold in electorates. Te Pāti Māori with four, that's 9 of 72 seats for smaller parties.
It sort of feels, I think, because obviously in the lead up to the election with the polling, it's all really focused around party vote. And I think you'd sort of, the electorate seats kind of slip off the radar a little bit. But you could argue this is sort of like proper MMP now, that you've got some of those smaller parties having enough presence and profile to gain electorate seats.
Yeah. The Māori electorates have been incredible. They've been real kind of nail biters for those involved. As I mentioned earlier, at one point I think there were 6, possibly 7 of the 7 Māori electorates that were going to Te Pāti Māori, which would be extraordinary, and some, as you say, still could come back. Can you guide us, Anna, through Māori electorate situation as currently through your magic...
through my magic portal.
Magic remotely connected machine.
So obviously no surprises in terms of Rāwhiti Waititi taking Wairiki very, very comfortably. Debbie Nawera Packer came out ahead in Te Tai Hauoro. She's got a majority of over 6,000 there. And then, of course, very exciting, Hana Rafati Maipi Clark. I mean, quite a big moment, really, for Nanaia Mahuta to be gone.
After 26 years.
26 years, longest-serving.
Longest-serving female, consecutively serving female MP.
Which means, to put it into context, that she would have been in her 6th year as a parliamentarian when Hana Maipi Clark was born.
Yes.
Yep. I mean, it's kind of, I guess, I mean, it is a very big moment for Mahuta. I guess it's kind of a passing of a baton, I suppose, in a lot of ways. But that was, Yeah, I mean, that's exciting for Hana and for Te Pāti Māori for sure. And then you've got Tāku Te Whiras in Te Tai Tonga.
Te Tai Tonga?
Yep.
That's sort of, again, I don't think it's completely off the just possible list for some people, but Te Tai Tonga is in the Terekātane whānau, mm-hmm. So deeply yep. It feels quite seismic to me.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think he fronted at the debate, didn't he? He was the minor.
Tāku Te Whiras.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did some really impressive debate performances. Yeah.
And I think at the time, I think a lot of people were like, who is this guy? He's number five on Te Pāti Māori's list. Oh. Why is he here? Oh. Yeah, now
that's why. I guess.
Now he's an MP.
He's an MP, and Meka Whaitiri won't be an MP.
No, so Labour have held on to Ikiro Rafiti, and again, that looks pretty comfortable and pretty settled. Kushler is out ahead by 2,500 votes there, and then the one that is looking, I mean, yeah. So Titai Tokorau with Calvin Davis, who has sort of hinted at the fact that if he didn't win the seat, he probably would say goodbye to politics. He is ahead at the moment by 378 votes. So it's close.
Mm. Yep, so there's a couple of ones that will certainly go to specials there, which could.
And look, Pene Henare in Tamaki Makaurau is only 383.
Yeah. So those two.
Yeah.
I know special votes tend to lean left. Is there any sort of like, because it's all Labour, Te Pāti Māori, is there any sort of suggestion of where they might fall for these, or is it sort of anybody's game since they're both on
I'd
the
left?
I'd love
to answer that question, but we're out of time. I don't know, sorry.
Yeah. You're not answering, you're just answering questions you're not supposed to ask.
I don't know. Certainly, it's not just the what it means in terms of them being close, but what it means in terms of the potential to create an extra seat in Parliament and therefore, meddle with that balance in terms of whether or not Uncle Winston is required. So, yeah, but I mean, we'll do that work and we'll have pieces up on the spin-off for you in the morning. Anything else that stood out for you in the coverage and the in the field tonight, we've had a bunch of reporters from the different events, so go and check all that out on live updates. Anything else that's worth highlighting?
I think probably Joel McManus, who was at the Wellington editor, who was at the Labour Party, he said the spirit was not as down as you would expect, but I think it was because all of the MPs, no one really went to the party. It was like staff and supporters and maybe family, but in terms of actual MPs, they all seem to be either huddled in another room or at another location entirely.
So Grant Robertson was there. We cut to him occasionally during the speech.
He popped up for an interview and then he left again and then he came back for Hipkins' speech. So it does feel like there's a very different mood to Labour compared to all the other parties. I think all the other parties are pretty happy. Labour's kind of the overall loser on the night.
I mean, the Greens seemed pretty happy when I went into their thing, and of course, they bringing in 14 seats of the current amount. We should have perhaps touched on that more. Is a great result for the Greens, albeit one where they now are well away from the levers of power. Hey, let's leave it there. We're gonna be back in here for a Gone by Lunchtime podcast with Annabelle Lee Mather and Ben Thomas and me. And you guys can have a little lion, watch the rugby, come on the Dutch.
We're doing news reporting at 8 a.m.
Oh, good.
So
and sending a bulletin, a special.
A bulletin?
Sunday
what
morning
time,
election
what time
special.
Do you pledge to get that out to the people?
Anna? Well.
What time do you promise to get it out?
I thought, and this is not because I want to sleep in or that I'm going to do it all tomorrow morning. I thought I might wait until after the rugby's done, you know? Well, it's either that or before.
Before. No. All right. Sam is suggesting that you should drink those shots if you want them. I can't be doing it. Are they all coloured for the? You meant to drink them when someone wins a seat. There should be an awful lot of red ones left there in that case, I think. Thanks, Sam Robinson. Right. Thanks to Jane Yee and to Tiahi Butler and everyone else involved in this.
Turn the mic off.
Late night live stream debrief. Do weddy. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Kia ora e te iwi, Tiahi Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.